Braves, Bulldogs, Falcons, Yellow Jackets, Hawks, Eagles. From the heart of Georgia, it's the Bill Shank Show.
Happy Monday and welcome to our broadcast. I'm Bill Shanks here on this unbelievably busy Monday, October the 12th, as we are here for the next 3 hours and 40 minutes or so leading up to game one of the National League Championship Series between the Atlanta Braves and the Los Angeles Dodgers, a game that we've been waiting for 19 years, and it'll finally be here tonight. We got a lot to talk about. We got several guests on for the 4 o'clock hour. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk here in the 3 o'clock hour. I'm going to talk. Russ is going to talk. Then we got the guests in the 4 o'clock hour. Then we're going to have an hour and about 40 minutes of phone call time where you can call up and talk about our three big stories of the day. Three huge stories, really. Braves and Dodgers tonight is the main story because it's a playoff game. Falcons have finally fired both Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn. Obviously, whenever there's a coaching change, it's a big deal. And also, the pending game on Saturday at 8 o'clock between Georgia and Alabama. And also, what happened over the weekend with Georgia beating Tennessee, how they did that, and also how Alabama beat Ole Miss, and how that has set the stage for one heck of a contest on Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. Well, you know what, Russell Brown, we knew back in May and June when we were swimming in emptiness. Boy, I like that. That's a real deep comment right there. I don't know where the hell that came from.
I like that.
At some point, it was all going to kind of hit the fan at once. Today, it's kind of swerving on the fan right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it hit me last night of how much is happening in the sports world when I'm listening to game one between the Rays and the Astros. Almost in tears. I'm so happy because my football team has been liberated. And someone texts, "Oh, the Lakers just won the NBA title." And I thought, "Oh yeah, that was going on tonight."
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everything is happening.
I know it. It was like, wow, the NBA is still playing, which, I mean, I knew it was, but still, you're right. It was kind of second fiddle, maybe fourth fiddle to what was going on last night for sure. We're going to have three guests in the 4 o'clock hour. Greg Walker, former Braves hitting coach, will be here to talk Braves baseball. Jake Rowe, 420, dogs247.com to talk Georgia. And then Brent Beard at 440 will talk SEC. Well, let's start with the Dan Quinn situation. He's been fired, and so has Thomas Dimitroff. I think the Dimitroff part, I have to admit, surprised me. We knew this was coming. We knew after the game it was coming. It was inevitable, obviously. And then I got the word from a source, one source, then two sources, that, yep, it's fixing to happen. And then everybody obviously had heard the same thing, and it happened last night. Dan Quinn and Arthur Blank fired Thomas Dimitroff too, which was just shocking because I thought he might wait till the end of the season for that. But Rich McKay is going to step in and run things for the rest of the season, and then Raheem Morris is going to be the coach. You know, yesterday when I was hearing and tweeting about what I had heard that this is going to take place, I obviously was still kind of skeptical because of Arthur Blank. He likes Dan Quinn a great deal, and he likes Thomas Dimitroff a great deal. He's had Thomas Dimitroff obviously there for 13 years. That's not easy. I understand that, and I understand firing someone that you like tremendously is not easy. But this is a business, and we shouldn't be in this position. I think most people can attest to the position that this should have happened last year after the season, that it made this season a wasted year. I mean, we said that. We knew that. It wasn't rocket science, but it was obvious that he had made a wrong decision in keeping Dan Quinn. And the only reason he did it is because he liked him. And, folks, we learned in Athenstown that doesn't work. You just don't do that. You know what? There are going to be a lot of coaches you're going to like. A lot. There are a lot of coaches you like. And some that will be tough to fire because of what they do, how they are, who they are, what they are. There are not many bad people out there. You know, Bill Belichick is a jerk, but he's probably not a bad human being. But, you know, you have to make tough decisions. And I hate that Arthur Blank waited until last night to do it. It was a total waste of a year, and that's unfortunate. It was also the reach of a year for two people to try to keep their jobs, and they miserably failed. And now they are hurt again and again and again with numerous players who are banged up and out. And they also had some pretty piss-poor performances, to use a lot of alliteration, that was shocking yesterday. And Matt Ryan's at the top of that list. I tell you, I tweeted out yesterday after the game a list of things to do that I think are imperative to get this situation straightened out. Number one was fire Dan Quinn. Well, check that off. It's happened. Number two is fire Thomas Dimitroff. Check that off. It's happened. Number three was fire Rich McKay, and obviously that has not happened. And I know somebody had to stay around and run things for the next 11 games. I understand that. Four was fire the entire staff, which, again, you got to have coaches. They had to have somebody step in. It's not like they were going to go hire Mike Ditka for 11 games to come in out of his retirement, or Lehman Bennett or somebody like that. Hey, could you come watch over this Dan Reeves for 11 games? No, that wasn't going to happen. Number five, trade Matt Ryan. And I have gotten on the bandwagon of trading Matt Ryan and trading Julio Jones and trading anyone else of value, which was number seven. And number eight was accumulate draft picks. It's those eight things that have to happen, and two of them already have. And I do not think that Rich McKay nor Raheem Morris nor the staff will be here at the end of the year. I hope that when they told Raheem Morris he was going to be, or they wanted him to be, the interim head coach, they also told him, now, you're not a candidate to take over full-time. But I know they didn't. I mean, I know they didn't. They're not going to tell an African-American coach that. I mean, they're just not. Let's just be honest about it. Let's be total honest about it. They're not going to do that. Raheem Morris doesn't need to be the head coach. It has nothing to do with the color of his skin. It has to do with the fact that he doesn't need to be the head coach because of moronic things he has said, and, to be honest with you, moronic things that have been done with him in this organization, like have him on the offensive side of the ball, which made no sense whatsoever. But the comment he made about not taking Russell Wilson seriously made me not take Raheem Morris seriously. And I have no desire for Raheem Morris, a failed Buccaneers coach, to be the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. I think part of the reason that it might have taken a while for Arthur Blank, and I'm just totally speculating here, to figure out what the heck he was going to do, is his options were awful. I mean, I know D. Orlando Ledbetter talked about, okay, you know, there's Greg Knapp, there's what's the other guy's name who coached the Chargers for a while, you know, there's Raheem Morris, there's Dirk Cutter. I mean, blah, 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 blah. They're all bad, but they're interim coaches. And we as fans now have to do something that's not easy to do that we've really been doing already, and that is cheer like hell for the other team. When you're 0-5, when you've got the mess the Falcons have, the last thing you need to do truly is win ball games. They need to go 0-16 if they can. And I know they're not going to do that. I don't know if they're going to beat Minnesota this week. Obviously, Minnesota lost last night. They're not having a great year. If you're Minnesota, you're scared to death of Atlanta because you always know that a new coach, an interim coach, can have the troops rally behind him. But this is not a very good team. I mean, it's just, it's not. And for all the talk about Carolina is somebody you can beat, no, that's not true. This team needs one of two people to be the head coach. I really believe that. And my preference had been to have someone who had previous head coach experience compared to an assistant coach, like the direction he went with Dan Quinn and Jim Mora and Mike Smith, who were three of his selections, obviously, guys who had not had previous head coaching experience. But I think there are two names right now that are the top of my list to coach the Atlanta Falcons. And number one, it's Eric Bieniemy of the Kansas City Chiefs, the offensive coordinator. And number two is the offensive coordinator for the team that played them yesterday, and that's Joe Brady from Carolina. Joe Brady's going to be a head coach one day. He may not be ready, but, you know, this team's not ready to win. So it's going to take 2 or 3 years for this team to get back on track, and he might be the perfect candidate to step in and be the head coach. But those are my two favorites. And to be honest with you, I want Lewis Riddick as the GM. We're going to hear a lot of names here in the next couple of weeks and months because it's going to take a while, obviously, until this is done. And you know, we're going to hear Lincoln Riley for some dumbass reason. I don't get that. I'm sorry, I don't. I don't really want a college coach. We're going to hear a lot of different names. But to me, seriously, it begins and ends with two names. And, Russ, I mean, I'm probably leaving somebody out that would probably be a good candidate. But to me, those are two guys who are going to be a head coach in the NFL who – are really good offensive minds and who I think, yeah, I want that to be kind of part of what they do. And, you know, people may say, well, how about Josh McDaniels? And again, there are going to be other names that are going to pop up where you might think, well, yeah. But, I mean, to me, those are the two that have to be at the top list right now. But they've got to pick a GM first. And I mean, they're going to be already are a ton of assistant GMs and director of pro personnel folks that are out there. But, man, I just think Lewis Riddick and Eric Bieniemy would be one hell of a duo.
I do too, and I think also or Joe Brady. I don't have any hesitation on any of that, and I think that's the list, right? I mean, that's for me. There's nobody else, and the thing is, and I'm going to be very optimistic here. When Lewis Riddick gets here, he's in charge. Period. Mm-hmm. He is in charge. There's nobody looking over his shoulder. There's no owner talking about people's being Falcons for life. It's his football operation. And then your coaching choices, Bieniemy and Brady, come in here. And it's really up to Rich McKay, to me, to really make the job attractive for the next person in. And if they want to put Rich McKay in some sort of a ceremonial advisory role, that's fine. But he can't actually do anything. He's got to be like the Queen of England. If they want to, you know, if you want to set him up and he makes appearances and all that stuff, that's great, whatever, to thank him for all the time and everything that he's done with the organization, that's fine. But they need to make this an attractive job right now, because what you have is – you have a quarterback and you have a wide receiver, or two wide receivers. I think Calvin Ridley is probably the best receiver on the team now, but you've got a quarterback and two wide receivers. And yeah, that's going to be attractive to some people, but I think smart coaches are going to look at this situation and know that Julio Jones has probably got maybe one more year left in him, if any. Matt Ryan's coming to the tail end of his career. You don't have a defense and you don't have any cap space. So if you can make the trades that you're talking about, that can free up some cap space. It can give you a lot of draft picks to start to rebuild this roster, and it makes the job more attractive. Because here's the thing. Joe Brady, as an offensive coordinator who's kind of flown up the charts here, you could probably go get him. But what you have to convince Eric Bieniemy, if that's your choice, is that he doesn't need to hang around Kansas City until Andy Reid retires and be Pat Mahomes' coach. He needs to come on down to Atlanta. So there's some work to be done, in my eyes, to make this job a little bit more attractive for somebody like that.
And part of that, I think, is what you said about letting the candidates know it's your deal. It's your deal. We cannot have, because I don't know if someone's going to come here and run this organization thinking that if they want to get rid of Matt Ryan or Julio Jones, the owner's going to step in and say, oh, no, you're not. Would that keep a Lewis Riddick or someone else from coming here? I think it would. And I'm not saying that those people are going to be dead set on making that kind of decision, but they want the ability to make the call. And like you said, Russ, if there's going to be this Falcon for life syndrome, for lack of a better term, that keeps getting in the way, we're at a critical point here where, unfortunately, and I saw this tweet earlier today from someone, and Brian Finneran, the former Falcons wide receiver, actually liked it and agreed with it 100%. Brian, of course, now at 6A The Fan in Atlanta, but he agreed with the point of Dan Quinn really wasted the best years for Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. They're older now, and Matt's 35. If it's going to take the new regime 2 years, 3 years to get this thing turned around, where's Matt Ryan in all this? And I know that's a hard conversation to have. I know that's not easy for some people to hear. He's a tremendous fan favorite. I know how people love their quarterbacks. I love number 10 who played there 40 years ago because I was a kid and we all wanted in the neighborhood to be Steve Barkowski and throw it 100 miles an hour, 100 yards. That was what he did. But that conversation's got to take place now. By the time Steve Barkowski was Matt Ryan's age, he was long gone. He was gone. And Matt is not Tom Brady. It's a shame that we have to look at his performance and know there are issues on the team that remain that make it difficult to truly judge his performance. But that's what a new regime is going to have to do. They're going to have to come in and make that call of whether or not they need to move on. And again, that's tough. I know it's tough whether you are in position to get Trevor Lawrence, which would be a great thing, or Fields, or how about Matt Corral after what we saw on Saturday night? I mean, anybody, it doesn't matter. It's just going to be difficult. But the new people have to have that ability to make that call. If I had to put money on the new personnel man, the new coach, turning this around and wondering if Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are going to be a part of it, there's no way I think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be something else, someone else. And therefore, it's going to be tough. But the new people need to make that call. Not Arthur Blank. If Arthur Blank doesn't know by now, he needs to get out of the way. And that's tough to tell a billionaire who owns the team. You know he loves the team. It's his team. He wants them to be successful. But he doesn't need to be anywhere close. He needs to do what Ted Turner did in 1985 when he got out of the way. Let Stan Kasten run the Atlanta Braves, and what happened when that took place? Well, the Braves turned into winners. They had a meddling owner who got out of the way, and look what happened. Stan Kasten, Bobby Cox, Paul Snyder built a perennial winner that rewrote the history for the Atlanta Braves, and that's kind of what needs to happen for the Falcons. First things first, though, they got Dan Quinn out of the way. I know he's a nice guy. I don't care. It don't matter to me that he's a nice guy. Because you know what? He didn't need to be the head coach of this football team. He probably didn't need to be the head coach of this football team for 2 years. He probably wasn't a good candidate to be the head coach in the first place. And you can say, well, he got all the way to the Super Bowl. He choked in the Super Bowl. Don't throw the Super Bowl up to me about Dan Quinn. Don't tell me, well, you got to give him credit for the Super Bowl year. No, you don't. Not when you choke like he did. His ability to get that team to the Super Bowl is totally negated for me because of what he did when he got there. That is choke. More than anybody has ever done in the history of the National Football League, period. So I'm glad he's gone. I couldn't stand the brotherhood crap. I couldn't stand the rah-rah Pollyanna coach speak BS that we went through every damn week after a loss. I don't like that. I want nothing to do with that. I want real people. And if that's who he is, God bless him. But he needs to be coaching, as Russ has pointed out several times, a college football team, not an NFL team that probably, even though they've been publicly supporting him, probably are glad he's gone today. You've got to think they're like, man, I'm so tired of that up with people crap. Because y'all know, I mean, whether it's Mark Richt or Dan Quinn, I don't want that BS around my teams. I don't. It's just BS. There's nothing else to call what Dan Quinn did and said on a regular basis but BS. And you know it's true. There's nothing else to call it but that. And he's gone. And Dimitroff, you know what? Thank you. He deserves our thanks. He did great things to this organization. But the time had come for him to go. And it's happened, and I'm awfully glad. And I hope they go 0-11 for the rest of the way and lose every damn game and can draft Trevor Lawrence and turn the page and start over. Because they need to do it. They really do. All right, breaking news out of the SEC. Missouri and Vanderbilt will not play as scheduled this weekend. First postponement of an SEC football game in 2020. We'll check on the reasons for this. You can only imagine what the reasons probably are. But that's it. The first postponement of the SEC, Missouri and Vanderbilt will not play this weekend. And for them to already postpone it several days later is big. There's an expected press conference in about 10 minutes. So we will find out what the deal is, but that they are, everybody's reporting that the Vanderbilt-Missouri game scheduled for this weekend has been canceled. We'll keep an eye on that. Wow. And Caleb Chapman, what the hell happened to him? He's the guy who ran all over Florida. Did you hear Florida lost, by the way? Caleb Chapman is that receiver for Texas A&M. He had 9 catches and 151 yards, 2 touchdowns. And he has torn his ACL and is out for the season. Wow. How about that? Now, and I don't know what the when that happened or if that's known. Maybe I just didn't know it. But Caleb Chapman, who, if you watched any of that Florida-Texas A&M game, by the way, did you hear Florida lost? Caleb Chapman had an unbelievable game for the Aggies, and he's gone. Out. Wow. How about that? All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk Georgia, Tennessee, and Ole Miss and Alabama. Then we'll talk a little Braves baseball. Greg Walker, Jake Rowe, Brent Beard coming up at 4. Your phone calls at 5. We lead you up to Game 1 of the National League Championship Series coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. With Russ Brown, I'm Bill Shanks. You're listening to The Bill Shanks Show.
Now, back to The Bill Shanks Show on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. We are talking sports on this very big day as the Braves get ready in about 4.5 hours to take on the Dodgers in Game 1 of the League Championship Series. We'll have complete coverage for you right here leading up to the game. Of course, we'll be here until the pregame takes over and then first pitch right here on the Superstations on all of our radio formats and platforms, 93.1 in Macon and Warner Robins, 105.9 in Warner Robins. 98.3 all over South Central Georgia, from Perry down to Cordele, McRae to Butler, and Americus. We got you covered right here on thesuperstations.com. If you're listening online, hint, hint, wink, wink. All right, Georgia football. I said last week that the one thing that I was so curious to see was whether the vaunted Tennessee offensive line, and if you didn't think they were good, just ask them, was going to be a test for Georgia in this game, especially knowing that the Alabama game was coming up. By the way, I just saw this. I'm going to say it real quick because I'll forget it. Report out right now that former Georgia star Lorenzo Carter, linebacker for the Giants, out for the season with a ruptured Achilles. I think the Achilles is the injury of the year in sports. A lot of them. Soroka and Lorenzo Carter, the former Bulldog. So we hate to hear that for him. And the Giants have had, New York Giants have had a ton of injuries. So I wanted to see the Tennessee offensive line and the Tennessee run game, which had good players, Ty Chandler, who came into the game as the SEC's leading rusher, and Eric Gray, the young man who was getting a lot of love from people as well, and what they could do against Georgia. I didn't think Tennessee was going to win the ball game. Tennessee's not as good as Georgia. The talent level is just not there. Was it shocking with what happened to start the game? Well, yeah, of course. Anytime you have a turnover that is it turns right into points for the other team. Yeah, that's a little shocking, and it was a bad snap, and I think Trey Hill atoned for it later with what he did, but nonetheless, it was not a very good way to start the game. Georgia once again had a sluggish first half, but you know what? The game is not about 2 quarters. It's about 4 quarters, just like in Arkansas. Arkansas's the first half in Fayetteville was awful. We know that, but
The second half wasn't. Second half was very good. They blew them out. Same thing happened the other day for Georgia and Tennessee. Georgia blew them out. And it was not a good first half. There were things that was like, wow, what is going on? But overall, it's hard to complain about what was seen in that game. And here's the thing. No matter what was going to happen in the Georgia-Tennessee game, Georgia was going to have to play a perfect game for people to not say, well, they can't do that and expect to win against Alabama. Right? Let's be honest. It was going to have to be a perfect performance for the Braves, for the Bulldogs, against Tennessee to avoid that kind of talk. Because no matter what happened against Tennessee, we know, not even taking into account what happened Saturday night when Ole Miss ran all over Alabama, we know that this Saturday at 8 o'clock, the Georgia Bulldogs are going to have to play a great game to beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I won't say perfect, but they're going to have to play a great game. They're going to have to do very well. They're going to have to play at the top of their game. So regardless of what happened at Tennessee, that doesn't change anything. We knew that. We didn't need to watch Saturday's game against Tennessee to know that. We didn't need to know how Ole Miss handled Alabama's defense somehow, some way to know that. We knew it. But the answer to my question of how Georgia's defense was going to stand the tremendous effort by the vaunted, heralded Tennessee offensive line was answered resoundingly with the fact that Tennessee had net one minus 1 yard rushing on the day. Negative one. Now, you may say, well, I mean, you know, look, they obviously threw Garantano around, all that stuff. Well, the SEC's leading rusher the other day, Ty Chandler, had 8 carries for 11 yards. He goes from number one in the conference going into the ballgame in rushing to ninth. Eric Gray had 25 yards on 8 carries. You do the math. And overall, the running game, and look, Garantano's numbers count, negative one rushing yard. So people can say, well, I don't think Tennessee was as good as they thought they were. Maybe not. But it's time to give Georgia's defense the credit that it deserves. And I've been saying for a month now, I've never seen anything like what's going on with this Georgia defense. They've never had anything like this before. I went back yesterday and I was looking at some things of the Alabama-LSU games from the last decade. Remember those games? And I can't remember the dates now because I looked them up yesterday but I didn't write them down. But remember those games when Alabama and LSU would meet and it was like single-digit field goal wars? That showed you what kind of defense those two programs had at that point. Georgia's got that kind of defense. Now, I'm not saying that Georgia's going to keep Alabama to a bunch of field goals now, okay? But I am saying that Alabama, which scored 63 points and had 723 yards of total offense against Ole Miss, ain't doing it against Georgia on Saturday night. They're just not. Georgia's defense is really good, and I'm not saying Alabama's not going to score on Georgia. I think they are, but I don't think it's going to be anything like what we saw the other day. The reason Georgia fans are excited about what is going to happen this Saturday and can't wait to watch is not necessarily because of what they saw against Tennessee. Again, Tennessee, nothing changed against Tennessee. We knew going in they had a great defense. They came out and we knew they had a great defense. What has Georgia fans kind of perked up a little bit is the fact that Ole Miss ran all over Alabama to the point where you're saying, what the hell is going on here? Now, Alabama still has great offense. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And Mac Jones, for as much as people have mocked him or made fun of him or thought that he wasn't Tua or wasn't going to do nothing. Mac Jones is an efficient, solid, effective quarterback. A lot of terms you can use about Mac Jones that are all going to be positive. He's got a huge offensive line. Leatherwood, I think, should count for two people. And, of course, their running back ought to be in the NFL. Najee Harris, I don't know why he didn't go pro. I don't. Not only because I wish he wasn't playing Saturday against Georgia, but, I mean, my God. If you watch that game on Saturday against LSU, I mean, against Ole Miss, and obviously, granted, Ole Miss's defense was awful, but Najee Harris is an NFL running back out there, like, right now. Like, right now. And we know the receivers, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and John Michie, they're great. So Georgia's defense is going to have a tremendous challenge on Saturday night. And I can't wait. I mean, that's what makes, as both Kirby Smart and Nick Saban said today, this matchup a great matchup. Great matchup. Great offensive skill players. Great defense. Let's go. Tie them up and let's go. The question, of course, is going to be there is, now that Alabama has gotten embarrassed, and they were. They won the game, but look, don't tell me that Nick Saban's not embarrassed. Oh, yeah, you know he is. He's pissed. He admitted it. I'm mad. I'm fuming. I'm not showing it, but I'm pretty mad. It's because they gave up 48 points and 647 offensive yards. Oh, my God. And you know, all this talk about, well, Lane knew what they were going to do. Give me a break. This is not the same defense that we usually see from Alabama. You know, I got chastised on Twitter the other day from somebody because I said, oh, hold on now. They've given up some points to their two opponents so far, Missouri and A&M. I mean, they won easily, don't get me wrong, but they did not shut them down. And now Ole Miss has gone and done this. And again, I'm not saying that Georgia is going to score 48 points on Alabama, but I think the big question for this game is going to be, what does Georgia do against this defense that obviously is not Alabama-like? What does Stetson Bennett do against this defense? Look, if I'm Nick Saban, and he gave tremendous respect to Stetson Bennett today and talked about how well he's playing at running back, at quarterback, if I'm Alabama and Nick Saban, I'm telling my guys, look, you know what, if you don't want to get beat out there in the open field, in space, knock Stetson Bennett on his ass. Make Stetson Bennett's evening in Tuscaloosa be memorable for the trauma you inflict upon him on a daily, regular, rather basis, minute-by-minute basis. And I just make Stetson Bennett beat him. Maybe he can after what we saw the other day, but I think Matt Corral showed that he's a great quarterback. That kid's good. He's really good. I mean, that's a really good fit for Mr. Kiffin to have Matt Corral there. But what will Stetson Bennett do against Alabama's defense? We're going to be asking that question all week. What will the running game do against Alabama's defense? Well, you know, I think we all want to see more of Kendall Milton. And no knock on Zamir White. This isn't because he only ran for 50 yards and so many carries. But I think we've seen enough little glimpses of both Kendall Milton and Kenny McIntosh. That McIntosh speed is ridiculous. I mean, off the charts. I think we all want to see more of them. And we talked about this last week, but I will reiterate again the danger that Georgia's offense now has with multiple threats at receiver and even tight end. Trey McKitty got in the act the other day. Teams are double-teaming George Pickens so much that Kyrus Jackson is just doing really well. Four catches, 91 yards the other day. He's sixth in the SEC in receiving yards, 300. Pickens doesn't even have 100 because they're all over him, which is not his fault. But, I mean, it's opening opportunities, obviously, for Jackson. And this quarterback likes to throw the ball in the middle of the field. He does. Stetson Bennett likes to throw the ball in the middle of the field. And I don't know how good his vertical game is. Maybe we'll see it this week. I have no idea. But can Stetson continue to simply play well? Not great. Well. Look, I don't know if Georgia's going to be able to go to Alabama to win. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, until somebody goes over there and beats Alabama, until one of Nick Saban's assistants beats him, just give the edge to Alabama. And I do believe that, even now. But with what we saw on Saturday night, with how leaky, I'll use that word, and I think it's appropriate, how leaky the Alabama defense is compared to what it usually is, it makes you think Georgia's going to have a shot. And again, I'm not going to say they're going to win, but I think they've got a chance. I really do. Now, a lot of things have to happen. Stetson is at the very center of those points that have to go correct and right for Georgia. And also, I think, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine yesterday, we were talking about Stetson a little bit, the interesting dilemma that could be in place, let's say, if Georgia gets off to a slow start offensively. Does Kirby have the stones to pull the trigger and go with someone else if he needs to? That's a big question, I think, because obviously he can't afford to mess around. If he's going to win the ball game and the offense isn't clicking the first quarter, it's not like he'd be replacing Jake Fromm. But does he have the ability to do that? Will he do that, or will he stay with Stetson Bennett? Or if he doesn't go with someone else, does that tell you all you need to know about JT Daniels? Which I think is another question. Even the other day when Stetson got knocked out, Dwan Mathis came back in. So it's a great matchup. It's a great football game. Georgia's got a great defense. Chris Doering said the other night on the SEC Network, nobody in the SEC is playing defense. He's wrong. His team that he went to school at is not playing defense, and Florida needs to shut their trap. They're more worried about filling the stadium instead of trying to stop people. Georgia's got a great defense, and it's going to face the number one program in the country and in their conference on Saturday night. All right, plenty of Georgia talk, of course, all week long. We'll come back, talk Braves. I'm getting nervous. We'll talk Braves and Dodgers. Greg Walker, talk top of the hour to talk more Braves baseball, all that more as we continue right after this.
Back to the Bill Shanks Show on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
We are back on the show here. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. Arthur Blank is having a Zoom press conference right now. And a couple things that I've seen from it. First of all, a lot of BS talk, obviously, because it's coming from Flowery Branch, the most appropriately named city in America that hosts an NFL football team. Rich McKay said, the new general manager will have the final say on personnel, and he'll report to me. He left wiggle room on how the rest of the reporting structure will work. So I guess Rich McKay's sticking around. That's interesting, though, that the new general manager will report to Rich McKay. Arthur Blank, who's sitting back in a conference room with his double-breasted suit on, dropped a plug for his book and also dropped an Al Davis on everybody when he was asked what the fans should expect and said, just win, baby. Now Rich McKay has said he's not trading veterans to amass draft picks. Oh, my God. These people are absolutely bat-you-know-what crazy. When asked if veteran players will be traded for draft picks, Rich McKay says they are not predetermining the roster for the next coach or GM. They allow those people to determine the roster. Oh, my God. I don't even know what to say. They're just dumb as hell. Rich McKay says that the Falcons won't have a roster fire sale to clear space or amass draft picks for the next regime. The Falcons want the new decision makers to have say on how they address the roster. Okay, I'm not saying trade Matt Ryan and Julio Jones before the trade deadline. But if there's somebody out there, like they had a chance to do last year with Devontae Freeman, that you can trade and get a draft pick for, why would you not do that? Anyway, these people, part of me wants to say, until Arthur Blank and Rich McKay are gone, this is going to be a waste of time, because these two are just delusional as the two they just fired. But anyway, let's talk about the good part of what's going on in the state of Georgia today. The good part is that in 4 hours and 17 minutes, the Atlanta Braves will play game one of the National League Championship Series. Russ, I'm sorry. I hate Arthur Blank and Rich McKay.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but the root of the problem is the crap that they're spewing out right now.
Well, I mean,
Arthur Blank just said, real quick, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
He just said, this is not a 500-ball organization. That is not what we promised our fans. Dude, what was – I'm not saying dude to you, Russ, to Arthur. But, Russ, what the hell was Dan Quinn's record? 43-42. Who the hell is he kidding?
I don't know. And you're not going to – you did. Oh, I could just – I don't know, man. I mean, look, it's an NFL job, the GM job and the coach's job. So you're going to find somebody. I'm not saying nobody wants to come here. Somebody's going to want to come here. But as far as going out and getting that person to lead the football operation like we talked about, that's not going to happen. Because anybody that is looking for that type of a gig – isn't going to come in and let Rich McKay look over his shoulder. Arthur Blank demoted Rich McKay when he hired Thomas Dimitroff. How did he somehow weasel his way back into being in charge of the general manager? It's ridiculous.
I tell you, no team gets my blood pressure up of the teams I love more than the third team on the list. And they're probably fourth now because I love the Hawks even more than the Falcons. It's incredible. All right. The Braves and the Dodgers play tonight at 8 o'clock, game one of the National League Championship Series. And I can't wait. Sincerely, I cannot wait. I'm sorry that the Falcons are getting my mind off what we all should be talking about now, but they're just crazy. But nonetheless, I can't wait. To think that it's been 19 years since we prepared for a game one of a National League Championship Series is incredible. Oh, to be 31 again. But the unbelievable thing about this for me is, for so many years between 1991 and 2001, the Braves were in the league championship series. 91, 92, 95, 96, 99. 2001. Six times in 11 years they were in the league championship series. So we were used to it. It became where it was not that big of a deal because we were used to it. It happened all the time, you know. People made fun of Atlanta because their fans didn't go to the playoff games. I don't think you can – if you polled 100 Braves fans who were of the age back then and asked them, did you go to a playoff game between 1991 and 2005 during the run – I think the percentage of people who didn't go, who are true Braves fans, would be really low because they had so many Braves playoff games. Well, it's been 19 years since a league championship series game has happened, and therefore, I can't wait. I mean, I'm so excited. I didn't sleep very well last night. I worked on stats yesterday because I just was wanting to see what was in the numbers. And you know what the numbers showed me is the Braves have a really good shot at this. I'm going to say the Braves are in seven, maybe six, because I'm a Braves fan. Can they win? Absolutely. They can. They can win this thing. They could go to the World Series. They could win the World Series. You know why? All they have to do is go 8-6. When you kind of think about it like that, it's a little bit more simplistic. But basically, the Atlanta Braves have to go 8-6 in their next 14 games, and they're the World Series champions. When you get this close and you kind of put it in those terms, it's kind of real, you know, that a team that was 10 games over 500 And last year won 97 games, and the year before that 90 games. All they got to do is go 8-6 the next 14 games, and they'll win the World Series. But we know it's not that easy because every pitch is big, every inning is big. Everything that happens is so magnified because it's the playoffs. But, Russ, I just can't wait. Can you?
I really can't. I mean, it's I'm nervous. I forgot what it felt like to be nervous about a league championship series because, like you said, it was just kind of a rite of passage. This is what the Braves did. And I and another part of it, too, is I had convinced myself coming into the playoffs that the Braves just didn't have the starting pitching to really compete. It was a fun ride, da-da-da-da-da. We get this offseason to fix it and then go for it next year. But after what Ian Anderson and Kyle Wright have done in this postseason, I really do believe the Braves can beat the Dodgers. I believe the Braves can win the World Series. And look, the other three teams remaining probably have just as good a shot as the Braves do, but the Braves do have a shot. They do have the starting pitching with these young guys. I'm excited for Max Fried to get back out there after not so good performances last time out. And when I look at this Dodgers lineup, Bill, I mean, they can score runs in a hurry and the power is there. But from an average standpoint and a rally, so to speak, standpoint, if the Braves aren't walking people, I don't think they have it in them. I really do think the Braves can win this series.
I do, too. It's a great feeling to know that when you go position by position through this, and we'll do that a little bit later in the show, the Braves have a great shot at this. They do. Have they got to play great ball? Certainly. It's the playoffs. You've got to play very, very well. But can they do that? Well, they've just proved in the last five games they can do that. And that's why I think it gives the Braves a great shot at being National League champions and going to the World Series. But it's going to be a great series. Just cannot wait. We'll continue to talk about it, get you ready for it, lead you up to it as we continue here on the Bill Shanks Show.